You ever wonder why the river doesn't just flow in a perfectly straight line? I mean, if the water needs to get from point A to point B, the fastest way we know is in a straight line. Why doesn't the river just flow straight all the time? Why does it often wind and twist and curve around? For that matter, why do roads go up and down and around and twist? Why don't they just go in a straight line so we can get there as quick as possible? Well, let me suggest to you the reason for roads, much like the reason for rivers, is because oftentimes as things are traveling, they take the path of least resistance. And so, you know, when there's hills or when there's obstacles or when there's a change in elevation, sometimes it's easier to go around things than to go through them, right? Now, as technology has advanced, and as our ability to cut through mountains and blow holes in rock have gotten better, roads are a lot flatter than they used to be. In fact, sometimes you can drive through a mountain rather than having to go over top of it. But that required a whole awful lot of effort and time to be able to make that path easier to travel. I think, though, that there's something about human nature that we typically, if given the option, will take the path that's easier. We like to take shortcuts. We like the path that requires oftentimes the least amount of effort, right? I mean, how many of us would not rather, after a long day of work, just grab some fast food on the way home and have a quick meal? Those of us who maybe would still prefer to cook at home, do you realize that even that is taking a shortcut from the olden ways of doing things, because most of the foods that we buy at the grocery store are prepackaged and processed, and you know they last longer because, after all, we don't want to have to run back to the grocery store, to the market every single day to make sure that the food that we're preparing that night is fresh. And so we take some shortcuts in that regard. Back when I was in school, you used to have to actually read the books that you were assigned to read. Nowadays, the kids have the option of, well, if you don't want to actually read it with your own two eyes, you can listen to the audiobook, right? Now, yeah, we'll encourage them to follow along as they're reading, but let's be honest. If I got somebody reading to me, why do I have to pay attention to the words on the page? You know, back in our day, when we were still in high school, you know, if we tried to get out of reading a book, we might have to go to the library and get the Spark Notes or the Cliff Notes, right? Because I don't have time to read the whole thing, so I'll read the summary of it, right? My favorite thing to do was to try to just skip all of the reading and just watch the movie. I'll just watch the movie and write my report based on the movie. That doesn't always work out too well in the end. I realize that even some things, modern inventions that have been designed and intended to help those who are physically handicapped to make it around, to gain access to places that they didn't. I realized that able-bodied adult male Americans are so lazy that we use the handicap accessibility stuff more than we just use the old-fashioned manual door. I can't tell you how many times I've walked up to the entrance of Spoon over these last several months, and there's two doors there. There's one door that you have to actually reach out and grab and pull it open and walk in, and the one next to it, you can push this nice little button with a wheelchair on it, and that sucker will open up for you, and you can walk in. I'll tell you this, because I've been thinking about it a lot. It takes longer to wait for the door to open on its own to go in, but you would not believe how many 18, 19-year-old men, young men, this is what they do. They walk up to the door, and they stop, and they push that little button, and they stand there and wait for that door to open, and then they walk through. I'm like, guys, just grab the handle and open the door. It's not that hard. But it certainly requires a little bit more effort than just pushing a button and letting the door do all the work for you. You know, how many of us, if there was a flight of stairs next to an escalator, would voluntarily walk up the flight of stairs? Some of us would, because we know that if you go up the flight of stairs, it helps keep you in better shape. But most of us, let's be honest, we'd rather go on the escalator. We'd rather go up an elevator rather than walk up several flights of stairs. And even at the airports or some of the train stations, you'd rather get on the movable walkway that just kind of takes you down rather than having to walk, even though you could probably walk faster than what the moving walkway is going. And I think that's because we have a tendency to want to do the easy thing. But I'm here to tell you that doing what is easy isn't always what's best for you. Just with some of these examples, eating processed food and fast food all the time, it may be easy, it may be convenient, but it ain't best for you. There are some things that are easy, but they're not always the best thing. And sometimes, let me suggest to you, doing the easy thing isn't even the right thing to do. And oftentimes, though, the inverse of that is that the things that are worthwhile, the things that are of true benefit and value, oftentimes require some diligent effort. And of course, this is not a new idea. I didn't come up with this and figure this out on my own. Jesus himself talked about this idea in the Sermon on the Mount. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, he observes, "Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many who enter through it, for the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life. And there are few who find it." Jesus said, when you're going through life, there's going to be an easy route to go. And there's going to be a more difficult path that you could take. And he observes that most people end up traveling down the easy road, or at least the road that seems easy. And the reason why it seems easy is because the gate is wide. It's easy to identify how to get in there, just like this wide gate on this wide road. It's not hard to find. It's easy to go through. It's not very restrictive. And as you're going down the path, there don't seem to be a whole lot of obstacles or hard things in your way. It's kind of like there's less rules. You know, come as you are. Do as you please. Whatever feels right to you, just go for it. If it's enjoyable, if it brings you happiness, if it gives you a sense of purpose, just whatever feels right to you, do it. That's the broad path. That's the easy way to go. At least it seems that way. But you notice he says that this broad way leads to destruction. So I like to picture it like this. It's like a wide road with a big gate. But what you don't realize is that just over the horizon there, it drops off a cliff. And boy, you could be running along on that road, you know, and making great progress, and this is fun, I'm going to walk for a while, you know. You do what you want to do, and the next thing you know, you're falling off the edge into destruction. That's the picture Jesus is painting here. But you know what's at the center of the wide road, I think, and why it seems so appealing to so many people, is because it's really focused on self. It's what I want to do. It's what makes me happy. I don't have to listen to all those oppressive rules. I don't have to consider what other people think and how other people might feel about stuff. It's all about me. And in the moment, that does feel good. But you live your life for yourself for too long. And even in this life, I promise you, it will begin to become difficult. Because you're going to find that you're all alone. You have no friends. You have no family. You have nobody that cares about you because you've never really cared about anybody else. You've done it your way, and that's all that you were concerned with. It's interesting, though, the proverb writer observes at least twice in the book of Proverbs, once in Proverbs chapter 14 and in verse 12, and again in Proverbs 16 and verse 25, he says, "There is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death." There's a way that when we do it our way, we think that this is right. Otherwise, why would we be doing it? We think this is the best choice, the best option. But the reality is that it ends in death. And it's true also that this self-willed, self-seeking way can also be self-deceptive. In Proverbs chapter 30 and in verse 12, the proverb writer says, "There is a kind who is pure in his own eyes, yet is not washed from his filthiness." Oftentimes when we're going down this less restrictive road, doing things our way, in our own eyes, we feel like we're right, that we're justified, that we're good to go. I mean, after all, if I'm not listening to anybody else, if I'm not listening to God, if I'm not worried about anything other than what I think, then yes, I'm going to feel good about myself. We don't realize that we're covered in filthiness. And I think, going back to our lesson last week, that's that idea of sin. We may feel self-righteous in what we're doing, or justified in what we're doing. And the reality is that we are anything but justified in the eyes of God. We stand guilty before Him, condemned in our sin, covered in that filth, covered in that darkness. And the reality is that this is one of the most foolish things that we could do. Earlier in Proverbs chapter 12 and in verse 15, there the proverb writer says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel." Did you catch that? Let me read it again to you. "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel." Are you the kind of person who always thinks that you're right about everything all the time? That you've got the right answer, that you know exactly what to do in every circumstance? No, I know. No, don't try to tell me. I know. Let me suggest to you, if that's your approach, if that's your mindset, if those are the kinds of words that are constantly coming out of your mouth, you might be dumber than you think you are. The proverb writer says it's a fool who thinks he's right all the time. But rather, a wise person, what do? They listen to counsel. They listen to what other people have to say. In fact, I would argue they listen to what God has to say. So let me beg you this morning, don't be a fool. Be wise and listen to some counsel. Listen to the counsel of Jesus here. He said, "Enter through the narrow gate. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life. And there are few who find it." Be one of those few. You know, it may seem more difficult to do things God's way. It may seem more restrictive. The reality is that the vast majority of what God's law restricts you on doing is for your own benefit. He's saying, don't do that stupid thing. Don't do that thing that's going to harm you. Don't do that thing that's going to ruin that relationship. Don't do that thing that's going to make it harder for yourself down the road. Do what is best for yourself. And ultimately, the thing that's best for ourselves is to pursue a relationship with God so that we can spend eternity with Him. Certainly is a road that is less focused on self, though. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why the narrow way, the small gate, is so unappealing and why so many people miss it. It's because they don't see themselves there. It is indeed a path that requires self-denial. And it's perceived then as not being something that's very fun or enjoyable. Rather, we're called upon to seek not our own benefit, but the benefit of others. To put their needs ahead of ourselves. But most importantly, we are to seek God first and foremost in our lives, rather than seeking our own selfish desires. The way is indeed difficult, as Jesus indicates. But the destination is worth the effort that it requires to travel down that path. Because it is the way that leads to life. The thing is that Jesus never promised that following Him was going to be something that would be easy. Or that it would be something that is fun, necessarily. But what He did promise is that it would be worth it. Notice in Matthew chapter 13, Two little parables in verses 45 through 46. Matthew chapter 13, beginning in verse 45, Jesus is teaching in parables here. He says, "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in the field, which a man found and hid again, and from joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field." The guy's out there in the field. He comes across this buried treasure. "Ooh, that's so valuable," he says. "I'm going to hide it again. I'm going to go home. I'm going to scrape together everything that I have, sell everything that I have, take it all and get rid of all of it so that I can have enough to purchase this field because I know that in that field is this huge treasure." He's willing to give up everything in order to obtain that treasure. A like parable, verse 45. "Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking fine pearls. And upon finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had in order to buy it." You realize how valuable then a relationship with God actually is. Here in these parables, Jesus is saying, it's like if you could count up every possession that you have, all of your cars, all of your houses, all of your tools, all of your, you know, your fun stuff, everything like that, all of your clothes, all of the food in your fridge, everything that you have, if you could sell all of that and get the cash value of it, that would be worth it to go, if you could use that then, to buy a relationship with God. The reality is that even if we could do that, though, we wouldn't have enough money to purchase a relationship with Him. In Matthew chapter 16, just a few pages over, Jesus says in verse 24 to His disciples, "If anyone wishes to come after Me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow Me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for My sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" Those are rhetorical questions. The point is that there will not be a profit for a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul. There is nothing of earthly value that compares to the value of your soul, the value of being in a relationship with God, inheriting eternal life. Even if you could amass all the wealth in the world, if you could own planet Earth, you couldn't go to God and say, "Here, let me, you know, give that to you in exchange for my soul." It's not enough. Or maybe thinking about it slightly differently, if you could own the whole globe and everyone and everything on it, at the end of the day, you would still have to say, that's not enough. Being in a relationship with God would feel more valuable to you than possessing all of that. Did you notice here, though, in Matthew 16 that Jesus began this discussion by saying that the way to have that is not by buying it, but rather denying yourself, taking up your cross, and following Him? How do I save my soul? I'll get to this in a second. You can't. But just following what He says here, it seems like the way to save myself is by losing myself. By denying myself, by taking up my cross and following Him. And again, I would suggest to you the idea, especially in the first century, if somebody told you that you have to take up your cross and go somewhere with it, that signified you have to die. Nobody ever saw anybody carrying a cross in the first century and thought to themselves, "That poor guy, I sure hope he makes it through that." No. Everybody that was carrying a cross, they knew that person was going to their death. It was a certainty. And so when Jesus says you have to deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow Him, He's saying you've got to die to yourself. And it's not just kind of a nice idea or a cool sentiment, like a suggestion, like, "Hey, maybe you ought to deny yourself a little bit so that you can follow Me more." No, notice in Luke chapter 14. In Luke chapter 14 and in verse 26... Jesus said, "If anyone comes to Me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be My disciple." Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. It's not a maybe. It's a impossibility. If you don't deny yourself and die to yourself, taking up your cross to follow Jesus, you cannot follow him. And you think, this is some pretty harsh language here. If anyone comes to me and doesn't hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, wait a minute, Jesus, I thought we were supposed to love everybody. You are. Jesus is not saying literally to hate these people, but he's saying, if your love for me does not make it look like your love for other people is actually hatred in comparison, that your love for me is so much greater than even your love for your own flesh and blood family, that when you compare those two, you'd say, yeah, in comparison, it looks like you hate your family. Jesus says, you cannot be my disciple. And of course, we all remember what Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12, that all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will be what? Persecuted, right? And so Jesus never said, hey guys, come follow me. It'll be warm. It'll be fuzzy. It'll be nice. It'll be convenient. It'll be fun. You'll have a great time. No, Jesus said, come follow me. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. You're going to have to deny yourself. And while you're in this life, you're probably going to suffer miserably. But we ought not to expect anything more. You remember what Jesus said to his disciples before his death in John chapter 15. In John chapter 15, in verse 18, he says, if the world hates you, know that it has hated me before it hated you. And if you were of the world would love its own, but because you're not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, because of this, the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you, a slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, then they will also persecute you. And if they kept my word, then they'll keep yours also. But all these things they will do to you for my name's sake, because they do not know the one who sent me. Jesus said right at the get-go, listen, the world, those who are antagonistic towards God, they hate me. I'm your master. If the slave's not above his master, how do you think they're going to treat you? Prepare yourself. They're going to hate you. You're going to be persecuted. You're going to be mistreated because of your faith in me. It ought to be expected. It's interesting, though, just a chapter later in John chapter 16 and verse 33, Jesus tells them, you know, I'm not telling you this stuff so that you'll be bummed out. He says, these things I've spoken to you so that in me you may have peace. What? You just told us it's going to be suffering. It's going to be terrible. No, I told you this so that you'd be at peace. Why? In the world you have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world. Just as a slave is not greater than his master and we can expect like treatment, we can also expect a like reward. Jesus already overcame the world. And so yes, while we're here, it may be hard, it may be difficult, but what he's saying is it will be worth it in the end. That narrow way, that small gate that's hard to get into, that's hard to travel down that road, in the end, it leads to life. It's worth it. So Jesus says, hang in there. The reality is that there are some things, though, that are so difficult, so, dare I say, impossible, that it requires God's intervention to accomplish. Maybe something like dragging a camel through the eye of a needle. It's a pretty impossible task, isn't it? Well, Jesus brought up this very thing. Go with me to Matthew chapter 19. In Matthew chapter 19, after he's had his discussion with the rich young ruler and the guy has kind of walked away, Jesus said to his disciples in verse 23, this is Matthew 19 and verse 23, he says, truly I say to you, it is hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Again, I say to you, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Now, some have suggested that when Jesus said it's hard for a camel to go through the eye of a needle, that he's talking about this gate in the city of Jerusalem in one of its walls that was tiny. And it wasn't even possible for a big camel to go through this small hole. It would have to get down on its knees and you could kind of coax it and it would crawl through. But I would suggest to you, Jesus isn't talking about some gate in the side of Jerusalem. I think he's talking about a literal eye of a literal needle. And he's saying that it's easier for a literal camel to pass through the literal eye of a literal needle and come out on the other side whole than it is for a rich man to get into heaven. You think that's impossible? Yeah, it is. That was the conclusion that his disciples reached here too. They said to him in verse 25, well, then who can be saved? I mean, it's easier to take a big giant camel and pass it through that tiny little eye of a needle. It's not possible for anybody to be saved. And Jesus said to them, with people, this is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. So earlier I said, you know, what do I have to do in order to save myself? I have to deny myself. The reality is that you can't do anything to save yourself. Once you are separated from God by your sin, there is nothing that you can do by your own strength, by your own power, to save yourself from that predicament. It would be easier for you to take a camel and pull it through the eye of a needle on a piece of thread than it would be for you to save your own soul. But here's the good news. It's not up to you to have to accomplish that on your own. The things that are impossible with man are possible with God. And Jesus would tell us that he is the way that has been provided by God in order for us to come to him. In John chapter 10 and in verse 7, Jesus said to them again, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thieves came to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Jesus says, you want to have abundant life? You want to be saved? He says, I'm the door. You have to come through me. Later on in John chapter 14 and verse 6, he would say to his disciples, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. You want to have a relationship with God? You can't do it on your own. You have to go through Jesus. He is the way to have a relationship with God. So my question for each of us to consider this morning is, will you come to God through Jesus the door? Will you enter through that narrow way, that small gate, Jesus, that leads to life? And here's where it gets difficult again. Every single person sitting in here this morning has to make that decision for themselves. Nobody gets to tell you what to do in this regard. Not even God himself will tell you what to do, or compel you, or force you, or make the decision for you. I'm reminded of what Paul says to the Philippians in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12. He says, so then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, not in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, he says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. He didn't say, let me work it out for you. He didn't say, go to your parents and have them work it out for you. Go to your spouse and have her work it out for you. He says, you're responsible for your choice, for your decision. Work out your salvation with fear and trembling. What are you going to decide? You can't let somebody else do it for you. There's not going to be anybody who's going to tell you what to do in this regard. It is your salvation. It is your soul. You have to make the decision for yourself. And I recognize that can seem hard. But sometimes doing the hard thing is worth it in the end.